Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. The State of the Union is behind us, although it was a close call because it seemed to go on for quite a while, Jim. And for the most part, even the president seemed kind of uninspired. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the good martini is that our mini prophecy on Tuesday actually seemed to bear some fruit. It's not often that political folks like us are pretty much dead on. But Paul Ryan, we expected great things of him, and he delivered.
A few years ago, reducing spending was important. Today, it's imperative. Here's why. We face a crushing burden of debt.
Well, much like Chris Christie, the news isn't necessarily good, but he delivers it in a very honest, forthright, and easy-to-understand way, which in the budgetary process isn't necessarily always the case. We didn't obviously get into the weeds of numbers and programs and things like that, but as far as the critical fiscal issue that faces us, he couldn't have laid it out any better.
By the way, Greg, I'm just really glad that Obama finished his speech in time for us to do the Three Martini Lunch.
Right.
I figured it would be stretching on for a good 20 hours, the way it was going, plodding along last night. Ryan did a very, very solid job. My colleague, Greg Polowitz, was watching MSNBC, so I don't have to, even though I'm a newfound fan of the network, having had me on now and gotten rid of Keith Olbermann. And he said that the Muppets on their panel were not making fun of him, which is kind of surprising. If he'd given them any opening, they would have. And we talked about correct predictions. I had actually posted on Twitter a few predicted pundit responses to Ryan, and what a downer. There were too many numbers. It was my understanding there'd be no math involved. Where was the sunshine? I like happy talk, et cetera, et cetera. And a couple people, including, I believe, Anthony Weiner of New York, made that particular lament. But, you know, the way I put it last night was that Obama was the salesman insisting on you could afford this new sports car he wants to sell you. And Paul Ryan is your accountant telling you, no, you can't. It's not necessarily a happier message, but I think we've just had so many experiences with so many politicians promising the moon, hope and change, if you will. The oceans will stop to rise. The sick will heal. I made a reference earlier today to John Edwards promising that Christopher Reeve would get up and walk when John Kerry was elected president. That when somebody gives us bad news, there's a certain, you know, applaudable honesty there. I think we're all tired of having sunshine blown up our you-know-wheres and just constant, you know, grandiose promises that never panned out. And Lord knows there was plenty of that in Obama's speech. So when Paul Ryan comes along and says, hey, the news is terrible and we're going to have to make a lot of cuts that aren't going to be fun but are absolutely necessary, you know, it strikes me as exactly the message for Republicans to have. And in a way, the coming elections will be a test of the maturity of the American people to see if they can accept the bad news and accept hard realities, or whether they want, you know, unicorns and rainbows and unrealistic happy talk.
That's exactly right. I think that's going to be a major point of the next election, because there's probably going to be an impasse given the current makeup of Congress and the White House right now. So, it will be up to the American people to determine whether they're willing to make some tough choices or really saddle their future generations. It's not just doom and gloom talk now. It's almost a certainty if something doesn't happen relatively soon. Obama, on his part, seemed to go out there and talk a little bit about deficit reduction, his $400 billion over 10 years, which is maybe half a drop in the bucket as to what actually really needs to be addressed. He didn't really mention entitlements other than to actually say their names. And then, of course, in the lines where the Democrats actually bothered to get out of their seats, it was basically the boilerplate stuff, saying that big oil, they don't need any more tax breaks, so we need to fund our solar shingle Sputnik project by tax breaks for big oil. And, of course, you know, anyone who's been to the gas pump recently thinks, oh, yeah, take away the tax breaks for big oil. That'll be real nice. And then, of course, the president really having a lot of credibility on the tax issue for the rich, talking about where we can find some more money to save.
And if we truly care about our deficit, we simply can't afford a permanent extension of the tax cuts for the wealthiest 2% of Americans. Before we take money away from our schools or scholarships away from our students, we should ask millionaires to give up their tax break.
So you job creators out there, unless you want kids to go hungry and not be able to go to college, give back the tax cuts.
You know, it's kind of striking that, you know, one of the reasons I think Obama's on a bit of a high point in some of these recent polls is because of the tax deal. He avoided, starting off the new year with a big tax increase that I think would have been harmful to the economy. kind of fascinating that after getting that issue off the table, he's really eager to bring it right back.
Right.
It's kind of like he's denouncing his own deal. I was waiting for a reference to hostage takers in this new tone, kumbaya, bipartisan Nirvana State of the Union address.
Right.
So, you know, on the one hand, I guess we should just kind of realize that this is what Obama's going to do. What's also kind of intriguing is that, of course, the plan for Obama was to raise taxes on the rich, you know, when he took office and the economy wouldn't allow it. And then 2 years later, the economy still wouldn't allow it. I'd be kind of fascinated to see what the economy is going to look like, you know, in 2 years. I'm going to be willing to bet that there are going to be a lot of Americans who are going to say that while things may have improved, they won't be eager to have another big tax hike on the rich or on anybody else. So we will see what happens down the road. I have a suspicion that the economic conditions for that are that make a tax hike not so painful will always be, you know, just a little bit further down the road, which is on the one hand kind of good for us, but on the other hand, it allows Obama to always talk about it as theoretical as opposed to actually, you know, enacting it and watching the dire economic consequences. There's a part of me almost wants this to be a teachable moment to see what to teach, show American people, oh, yeah, you like all this tax hiking rhetoric? See what happens.
Exactly right. Well, if he really wants to push that next year, I think Republicans will be more than happy to accommodate him on that. And I guess it's just kind of a toss out there to the liberal base, the very liberal base that didn't want that to be part of the deal at the end of the year. But I don't know why he really dwelt on that when he did, because I can't imagine that he's really worried about a challenge from the left in a primary in any way, shape, or form. So on to the third martini now. And the thing that I was dreading for so long was this whole kumbaya, this whole meaningless sitting together as if somehow people's positions on critical issues and fundamentally how they approach the role of government was going to change. But in the end, it just turned a really boring speech into an even more boring speech because there was no enthusiasm in the chamber whatsoever. You could basically hear individual people clapping at what used to be pretty big applause lines. And my favorite part of the night was watching John Boehner wish he was pretty much anywhere else on earth, even during applause lines that he liked.
Oh, you know, Boehner the entire time, you just look at that face that he's looking for a cigarette and maybe looking for a bourbon as well.
Right.
He's ready to turn in already. You know, one of the things about Obama's speeches is you look back at his, you know, famous speech about race during the campaign and most of his, you know, big sales pitch speeches for healthcare. Almost any Obama speech, Greg, you and I could pick out five sentences we like.
Sure.
And then Marcos Melitzas could find five sentences he liked. And, you know, Jeremiah, you know, the Obama, you know, never really seems to have an editor. He never sticks to one or two points. He always, you know, puts in enough things so that everybody can walk away remembering the two or three or four or however many sentences that they really agreed with and say, that was a good speech, never recognizing that certainly in tone, if not in substance, he has absolutely contradicted what he said earlier.
Right.
You know, last night, Greg, he promised a spending freeze. Well, you know I like that.
Sure.
And then he talked about all these new areas he's going to spend more money.
Exactly.
Now,
right.
If you want more spending, oh, I really like that part. If you and I are let's just say kindler, gentler, and perhaps had oatmeal for brains and had no experience of watching Obama before, we might well say, he said he's going to freeze spending. Maybe he really is centrist. Good job, Obama. Good job. You know, if we were a token conservative on some cable networks that won't go mentioned.
Right.
So there's a part of me just kind of like, this is more of what we see. You know, Obama always offers a buffet. And it just goes on. The end result of this is that his speeches tend to go on to Castro-esque lengths. and so last night, I think – I don't know whether people were subdued because of the, you know, the tone or the fact that this is, you know, right after the Tucson shooting and the memorial service. And when you've just seen somebody getting shot in the head, I think perhaps the usual pomp and circumstance of the State of the Union looks a little less meaningful and a little less serious and a little less important. But I think also it's just probably exhaustion. You know, he just wears the audience down to the point where no one can really, you know, sit around and object.
It was certainly an event that we're glad is over. It's good to know that our Sputnik moment has arrived at a time when he's gutting the NASA budget. That was a nice juxtaposition. And Jim will have hopefully more interesting things and more vital things to talk about tomorrow. But good to have this one behind us.
Looking forward to the next one, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.